As a lot of you already know, I have a little side hobby besides my learning over here, and it's beer. So, those of us that learned Karuvah's second Seder, a few things came up in some exciting tests that I decided that now would be a good time to, upon request from Elio and some other people, so now would be a good time to give a chavura on the kashrus of beer, the Gurney Ashkafa, and microbreweries in Halacha. So, I'm going to try my hardest to explain the technical points.
We're just getting the concept of microbrewery.
I'm going to try to explain the concepts as much as I could so we can understand the halachic applications. There are a lot of technical points, and if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask. So I want to start off. I learned with Akiva. Nice later. We learned with Jimmy. And on my masket, we had a guy who's brewing his beer, and he has someone else's hops. And he brewed the wrong beer, the wrong hop. The guy who was helping him brew used the wrong hop. So it was just, we see already back in times like Gemara, the concept of beer with the hops, it's not anything new. The other thing is, I was trying to confirm this for a fact. I don't know for a fact, but I once heard that there's a hatana of Devat Arba Rotzes in Europe, that Shalom Zachar is what can be served as beer and arbas, chickpeas. Again, if anyone can, you know, cook. Why? There's a takana as to the same way that some shuls have takana by kadeshim as not too extravagant.
Always limit.
To limit. So only beer, only arbas, and that's where everyone, not everybody likes beer, most people don't, but everyone runs across it when it comes to Shalom Zachar. Every single Shalom Zachar you go to will serve beer, at least of some sort. And it happens to be, now that we brought up Shalom Zachar, it's good to know because not everybody is always aware of what beers they're serving at Shalom Zachar. Sometimes you could go and might run into problems. So, like I said, I want to start with all the technical points. There's four main ingredients in beer. There's malt, which is usually malted barley. Not 100% necessarily is always barley. They also use wheat, rye, and oats. But similar to bourbon, there's always going to be barley because that's the best to convert the starches into sugars, to fermentable sugars for alcohol. So there's basically always barley, at least somewhat in the malt fill. Malt is they take the barley and assuming it's barley or whatever the grains are, and they get it wet. So like this, the sugars come out, and then they kill it, the sugars, because all these grains have natural sugars in them that aren't releasable until it's wet. And then they kill it by roasting it, kilning it, it's called. So all breweries, most of them don't. They already buy pre-malted barley or pre-malted wheat or whatever it is that they're using. They're not malting their own grains, but the malt plays a very big part in the color of the beer. So sometimes people will tell you, oh, if it's dark beer, it's this. If it's light beer, it's that. If it's dark beer, light beer, it's coming from the same ingredients. The same way coffee, you can have a light-roasted coffee and a dark-roasted coffee, and it's coming from the same coffee beans, and it's totally different flavors, the color is going to be similar. Beer, it can affect the color. You can have, there's a scale, it's called the SRM. I don't know what it stands for, but you can have a scale from a pale yellow to a dark black with red, brown, a lot of different shades in between. So that's the malt. The next ingredient is the hops. Hops is a bittering plant. It's also used for aroma. That is added in the second stage of the beer, which we'll get to. Originally, they used hops as a preservative. Also, because malt, once you have the sugars in the malt, it's very sweet. So they use it as a bittering plant to balance out the flavors in the beer. But again, originally it was used as a preservative. Hops have many different flavors that can come out of them. It's basically used to make beers bitter. Hops are a plant that's grown on looks like a vine. It's actually called a vine with a B. Whatever that difference might be. Okay, that's the second ingredient. The next ingredient is water. So water also plays a important role. The famous Pilsners, which is basically what all light beers that we drink now, is based on a town in Czechoslovakia called Pilsen, I think. I'm not pronouncing it correctly. And the water there is officially very soft. Again, Muncie here, we have hard water. What exactly that means? Minerals, not minerals. The water plays a role. And in fact, breweries that have multiple locations, they work very hard to make the water, as chemically treat the water so it should be the same as in the original location, because you can have totally two different tasting beers with the same exact ingredients except for the water. The last ingredient is the yeast. The yeast is what ferments the beer, the sugar, the starch, and mixes into alcohol. That's why in the ancient times, wine is considered more of a chash of a drink, because wine self-ferments. The grape skins have a yeast in it that self-ferments. You just leave it as it, once you crush the grapes and you leave it, it will automatically turn into wine. Beer, on the other hand, needs to be pitched with the yeast. And therefore, that's why for some reason it was looked down upon in the ancient times. So those are the four ingredients. So now that we have that, we can start with the basic process of how beer is made. So they take these malted grains and they grind them up and crush them. Different sizes, it doesn't really make that big of a difference. And they, what they do is it's called a mash. They mash it together with hot water. It's hot water and it's called cereals. It's a bunch of different grains. Oh, just one more thing. A lot of the big breweries, when it comes to malts, they'll throw in other it's called adjuncts, other grains such as corn and rice, which are make a lighter flavor in the beer. That's a Budweiser, Coors, and Miller, which we'll get to in Halacha, but if they need hechsher and those things, but it's made differently. It's not made with 100% malted barley. It's usually made with rice and corn, and therefore it has a lighter feel to it.
So Jack Daniels is called a sour mash. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between the processing where they're using very similar ingredients, and why does one become a Jack Daniels and one becomes a beer?
So you're asking a very good question, Doctor. Whiskey, bourbon, scotch starts off as beer.
Right.
They even have, I didn't prepare for that, but they have a name for it. It's called brewer. It's referred to as brewer's, a distiller's beer, I think. What they do is they distill it. Distilling is that they put it in a copper still and the temperature, they evaporate it, and then they distill it a few times till you get the pure alcohol. I'm not 100% sure, honestly, but it starts off as beer, like you're saying. It does.
Is there any wheat in it? Is it just
wheat? Wheat?
Whatever, barley. Is there any pieces involved?
There's no pieces. I'm about to get to that. So they mash the grains together with the water and turns into what's called wort, which is probably a German word. It's a very like soupy like mixture. At that point they proceed to get rid of the grains. It's called spent grain, and a lot of breweries either they throw it out or they give it to farms for animals to use as animal feed. There's no human purpose for it. So that's the mashing. The mashing leaves them the wort, like I just said, you have the spent grain, and it goes on to the boil. So they take what they have is like this very thick, there's no actual grains, they already got rid of it, but they're very thick, soupy-like mixture. They put it into, I think, like it's officially called copper, but they use all different types of things. But the point is that it boils. So, sorry, I missed the point about the mashing. It gets very hot, but the temperature is between 115 and 163 degrees, which is not boiling, but it's probably out to lettuce. So we'll see what that could come into halacha. So that was the mashing. Now back to the boil. So the boil has to boil. I happened to just look this morning and I saw the article that to boil the grain, the wort, is a tad more than 212, which is the boiling point. So it's really out to lettuce. 120 out to lettuce is a complete boil. So at this point is when they put in the hops during the boil. In fact, there's a brewery which happens to make not kosher beers, but they have a beer called 60-minute IPA, 90-minute IPA, 120-minute IPA. What is that? Entire process of the boil, they continuously hop the beer. They throw in the hops from the first minute of the boil to the last minute of the boil. But when the hops are added to the boil, that'll define how the beer tastes. Again, some hops are used for bittering, some hops are used for aroma, but a lot of it depends on when they throw it into the boil. At this point, once they finish the boil, they manage to get rid of the hops through some sort of filtering. And then they cool down the beer, and they add the yeast, they pitch the yeast, it's called. They pitch the yeast, and they let it ferment. Fermenting can anywhere be from about a week to a month, depending on how high the alcohol they want it to be. There are some beers, let's say that are called barley wine, it can range anywhere from 10 to 15-16% in alcohol, similar to that of wine, so that's why the name is barley wine. Otherwise, it has nothing to do with wine. And the fermenting process is very long. So it can send in the fermentation, so it's cold. But again, the first two points, by the mashing and the boil, we might have halachic problems because it's hot. Over here, it's definitely kavash, so you also can run halachic problems because even though it's cold, it's sitting for more than 24 hours. So then they continue the process. They do secondary fermentation a lot of times, not 100% of the times. It's in a different vessel. Sometimes they'll add ingredients, like different flavorings in the secondary fermentation where they let it sit again. And then there is the filtering. Again, not all breweries filter their beers. These days it's a big rage to have hazy IPAs. It's a style that started in the Northeast and New England, and a lot of the breweries nowadays are imitating that, where they have the beers that look very hazy. It's called milkshake IPAs because they look similar to milkshakes.
Just regular unfiltered beer.
Regular unfiltered beer, exactly.
They don't filter
from the yeast stage, from the fermenting stage. In other words, they take out
the barley.
They take out the barley before the boil, and they take out the hops after the boil. That they don't want any pieces in it. The yeast. Yeast is added in the cooling stage. They cool it after the boil. That's when they pitch the yeast. You missed that? You got that? That's when they pitch the yeast after they had already cooled it after the boil. So they don't leave the hop for too long because hop beer is open for bacteria, and they don't want any bacteria getting into the beer because it can totally sour the taste of the beer, which in some styles it's wanted, but mostly it's not. What does it mean to pitch? It's just a way of saying that they put in the yeast and they let the beer ferment. There is another style, which we'll get to, where they leave it open fermentation, where they don't actually pitch the yeast. They let whatever is out there to go in, and then they close it, and then that beer is usually sour beer. In Belgium, it's called a lambic. That's the style, because it started in Lambic, Belgium. And that's the style of beer that does not actually pitch yeast, but basically every single style of beer, they pitch the yeast. So when I say over here, it's not filtered, just the yeast particles. Then they move on to the bottling, the canning and the kegging, different packaging. There are some beers out there, especially some of the high-end beers, that they have their bottle fermented, which means besides for the yeast that they put in originally to ferment the beer and turn it into alcohol, they also... And they put it in a secondary fermentation in the bottle, so that this yeast doesn't actually raise the alcohol, but some beers can continue to develop even in the bottle. So that is the basic brewing process. Also, the yeast does make carbonation. I heard that sometimes they don't like that carbonation and they kill that carbonation and they add in their own CO2 to make carbonation, but that doesn't really affect any of the tastes or any other aspect of the beer. So now that we have the basic ingredient and the basic way to brew beer, we can start looking at kashrus on beer. So in the year 1516 in Bavaria, there is something called the Reinheitsgebot, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, which is the German purity rule. Now this law these days is looked upon with a lot of disdain as a restricting law. They're restricting the brewers from putting in whatever they want into beer. However, that's not really what the law was put in place for. The law was put in place to protect the consumers. This consumer protection law, there were a lot of brewers that were trying to get around the expensive ingredients of beer, and they were putting in different chemicals and to imitate the process of beer, such as the foam, or to clarify the beer. So they made a law in Bavaria, which spread to the rest of Germany over time. This law was actually only with three ingredients: the water, the hops, and the malt and the barley. They did not, at that point, know of yeast from Louis Pasteur, who was the one who showed that yeast didn't invent the yeast, but showed that yeast what yeast does. So there's two ways to make beer in those times. Either they, like we discussed earlier with the lambic, they did open fermentation, or more likely, they had what's called brewer's yeast. However, the first batch of beer was made is irrelevant, but if they save a little bit of the first of the batch, the same way sourdough, you take a little bit of the original starter of the dough, and then you can have sourdough. They say, you know, they have like a couple hundred year old like starters of sourdough. So same thing with yeast, you could take from the original beer, and that's how they used to do it. But when yeast was discovered somewhere in the late 19th century, they added the yeast to the Reinheitsgebot. So this really became, like, in general, this became an accepted practice to brew only with the four main ingredients and not with any other flavorings. Over time, more recently, the brewers have started adding in other ingredients, and that's where it became a problem. So just to pause right here, a lot of Mishkafas assume that beer has a chazaka being that it's brewed with these four ingredients, which used to be true, not true anymore. So it's very important to know that even if it, okay, we'll get to that, exactly how to deal with the beer and the hashkafas, but this is not the case anymore. So if anyone tells you that beer is kosher on a chazaka, unless it's made in Germany and it says brewed within the Bavarian laws, the Bavarian purity laws, then it's not true anymore. So
even if it says not flavored?
Even if it says not flavored. Because
what else do they put in?
So what else do they put in it? So first of all, the law, it's very interesting, this Reinhardt's law, especially barley. But there are some famous German styles, such as the one called Hefeweizen, which is made with wheat. It's German style, it's made in America now, but it was made with wheat all the time. So they say there's some exceptions to the rule, but because, again, the reason why I believe that there's exception to the rule is because the whole rule is put in place not to limit the brewers, but to protect the consumers. So if they're making legitimate beer with wheat, then there's no problem with it. But what they're, like I said earlier, they can put in oats, they could put in rye, they could put in wheat, they could put in corn, put in rice, anything that's besides for flavor. But if it's not, we'll get to at the end how to look at each beer in specific. So like we said, brewers started using flavorings in beer. Now, a lot of different flavorings are used. They use coffee, chocolate, fruit, many different types of things. So I'll try to discuss a little bit of when they're added, because that's when it makes a difference. Like we said earlier, if it's added during the hot stages, then you're going to have a problem with the kale. So
where would any of these things become a real issue? I mean, what ingredients would you put in that are potentially...
Okay, so we're going to discuss that. So a very popular ingredient to put in beer nowadays is coffee. So coffee is best added when the beer is cold. Again, coffee usually is always kosher. Not really a problem. And I don't know, I'm not passing a lot if there's a coffee beer you could go and buy it, but just saying when it's added, it's usually added in either the first fermentation or secondary fermentation, and that's when they get the coffee flavor that they put in the beer. There's also chocolate, which is put in. The most basic form of chocolate is when it's still, and I think it's called cacao, some sort of nibs. It's spelled C-A-C-A-O. I don't know, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. So that's the usual form of chocolate. They're not usually processing chocolate, putting processed chocolate in the beer. Again, something to consider when you're considering the process of beer. Fruit is something that's put into beer a lot. Fruit, again, I'm not passing any shadows, but I'm not passing any sakum over here, but fruit is fruit. So if you know for a fact that the brewery is using fruit, then again, it shouldn't be problematic. And fruit is also usually added in the second fermenter. Okay, these are all basic ingredients that can be added and are added in basically every brewery nowadays. Brews with some sort of fruit at some point in time. I don't think there's any brewery in America that brews just with the four basic ingredients, and that includes Coors, includes Budweiser. They all brew with flavors. The kosher sensitive ingredients. These days, there's a lot of breweries that brew oyster stouts. Sounds disgusting to us, honestly. I can't imagine it would be any good. But the research that I was able to do online, is that they put it in the boil. The reason for that being is they want the oysters to be cooked. Again, the oysters, they're adding in here for the flavor. So I'm not sure how much they're adding in. Which we could get into the different things of how to make it kosher, but they're definitely adding. I'm saying there's definitely breweries that brew with oysters. Another kosher sensitive ingredient is pig. There's a brewery in New Jersey, which I happen to see a beer of this brewery in a kosher restaurant. Not the pork beer, but they brew a beer called pork roll or something like that. The brewery is Flying Fish, based in New Jersey. And the chayr is problematic. They use pork in their brewing.
So what's the company called?
Flying Fish.
They don't have the shells up, or is it?
They're what?
The shells up, or is it?
They don't have it. I was in a restaurant under on Shaw in Lakewood that did have it. So.
Oh no, this is not the trafe one.
Not the trafe one. Not the trafe one. It's an IPA, but just Okay. Yeah, we're talking about the caleb. The problem is the caleb. So we're going
to
get to that in a second. Another kosher-sensitive ingredient, well, spices are, they use a lot also. So again, I don't really know the halacha of spices, but apparently spices do need hechsher. Flavoring also, which I didn't get to, by the fruit, a lot of times it's fruit flavored, but they're not, it could be naturally flavored, but it doesn't have to be the fruit that they're saying. Legally, they don't have to list the ingredients in the beer that they're putting in. So when it says naturally flavored, it could be pork technically, and the pork gives off a mango flavor. They can say mango flavored beer with natural flavors, and it could be pork. Again, it's not probable, but they don't need it to disclose it. So that's why when any flavored beer in general is going to need a hechsher, just because the flavors are very sensitive in halacha.
Why would they have to mention? Isn't there a measurement of, like, one, 200 or something? Is there a measurement that they legally have to say what the ingredients are? Because someone's sensitive to nuts, someone's allergic.
I have it on my phone. I don't know what it's called by heart, but there is a federal law that says that breweries do not need to list allergens. That's a federal law.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, right? Federal law. Okay. So then another crucial sensitive ingredient can be wine. There are breweries that use wine, and when I say wine, they use wine in the process of making the beer, so that also can be a problem with the caleb. Like Moshe pointed out, the problem over here with Alocha is going to be the caleb. There's one last thing that breweries do.
You're trying to trade up the brewery, not discussing the specific beers on the
right.
shelf.
Right. The beer on the shelf has pork in it, you can't drink it. I mean, that's pretty partial.
Okay.
Okay. Go knock yourself out. And one last thing that breweries use to flavor beer. So one last thing that breweries use to flavor beer is they add the beer to wood barrels. So the beer that's put in straight barrels, plain, not unused, and then of course there's no problem with that.
Sure.
A lot of beers these days, a lot of breweries are putting beers in bourbon barrels. It's very popular. Bourbon, of course, I mean, there are some problems with the chametz chavala pesach, but it's probably not a problem when you're coming to beer. But bourbon shouldn't be a problem either. They use rye, whiskey, they use tequila, and then they use wine. A lot of beers known as sours are aged in wine barrels to add to the sour characteristics of the beer. So then, again, that will not probably be a problem with the caleb if it's aged in wine barrels, because the bottling, for whatever reason, the way they bottle it, it's not a problem. It's not 24 hours, it's not hot. So you don't have a problem with the wine barrels, but of course you have to know if a beer is aged in wine barrels, and that will be most probably be problematic. Again, that's a different share for a different time. The same way the sherry is by scotch, they will be the same shot. So now that we know that breweries do add kosher sensitive flavorings, there's three distinct things to try to look at it look at it in the halacha. The first one is bittel. Do you say that these flavors are bittel? So, like someone said, I think it was you, that these beers are bittel time. You can say that's bottle b'shishim, so to speak, especially if it's a big brewery like Einaz or Busch, which brews Budweiser and Bud Light, and they also brew Bud Light wine and things like that. But when we're coming to bittel time, the beer is called an oyster stout. Chances are, again, I hope that anyone here ever tasted one. I definitely never did. Chances are it does taste like oysters. So even if the actual sheer is going to be bottled with shishim, you're probably going to run out of time a bit of time, though, because like we saw in the end of Tzadi Ches, that even if it's bottled with shishim, however, if you do taste it, it's going to be problematic. So you're going to have a problem with a bit of time. Another thing is also Hanan, where again, the whole, if there's a little bit of iser, then you can say that maybe the whole beer from us are there. Also, another thing is how big are the walls, how small the walls, how big are the caleb that they use. So, one of the things that the conscious agencies, the CRC and the Star K, which are basically the very two big conscious agencies that do discuss beer and beer and halacha, one of the things that they talk about is there's a lot of unknowns in the craft beer industry, the microbrewery industry. Right? The big breweries are more known, and therefore, like we'll see in the end that how they're passing that big breweries and the not flavored beers are okay. But the microbreweries, there's a lot of unknowns. There's, to date, over 4,000 breweries in America, with like two popping up each day. So the microbrewery industry in America is booming, and because of the fact that there's so many, and each one is distinct, it can't be like a general cloud. So, again, we don't know how big the walls are, and things like that. Another thing you want to come on to now is Ein Ben Yomer. So they brew their oysters out, let's say, once a year, you know. Why can't you assume that they brewed it in January, and you see that's when the beer came out in January, so they probably brewed it a few months before, but now you see that they're brewing an IPA, which is a standard non-flavored beer. Why can't you drink it? So when in a conversation with someone who's familiar with the beer industry, he told me that the beer industry is very, very competitive, and chances are of Ein Ben Yomer are very, very slim, because they're never going to leave their kaolin empty for a full 24 hours. So Ein Ben Yomer, again, we're talking about, at this point, without all this kaolin, the chances are it's just very small. So again, it's an unknown.
If it wasn't empty, it was filled. What's that like if it was filled with something which is kosher afterwards? It's Ein Ben Yomer from the Isser.
Okay, so we're going to get to that. So point. Is kosher, because every single brewery, they between batches, they hose down their equipment. Now, we don't really know how they hose it down and what temperature they use. And again, we don't know if it's been Ein Ben Yomer, because halachically it needs to be Ein Ben Yomer in order to have good hakavah, or 60 times the amount of the keli, which chances are they're not doing it. So it's very hard to rely on hakavah by itself. It happens to be a one-time email to the brewery, asking them if they're kosher, and this is what they responded to me. They responded to me that we brewed an oyster stout, and we do plan on brewing again. We don't use we don't use those kaolin for every single beer, and we highly sanitize it. So you can, this is what, I mean, he's a guy, but he said, depending on how observant you are, that's if you want to drink our beer. Now, again, they definitely highly sanitize it, and chances are that you do a very hot temperature, which would be enough alcohol. But again, we don't know for a fact. We also have to, based on what we said previously, we have to assume that it is Ben Yomer, and then Hagal wouldn't help, even if they are doing good, proper Hagal.
Every brewery is operating to maximum capacity, meaning they're putting out the new things every day.
So they're not all.
The second they empty out their tanks, they're bringing in.
No, but we're talking within 24 hours.
That's still quick, because they have to.
Why is it
right?
So heavy?
But there are so many kaolin that are involved in the beer, the chances of all. And like we said, that even if it's cold, it's going to be kavish. So beer can be sitting for weeks. Right. And then as soon as that beer is empty, they're already putting in the next one. So you have oyster stout sitting in the fermentation tanks cold for weeks, then it's kavish, problem, kavish. I would say that even if they're not brewing every single day, the brew kettle, the mash tun, the things that are hot, but that for sure will most probably be problematic, being that as soon as they empty that, ready, getting ready for bottling, they're going to have a beer, even if it's a few weeks later, and they didn't brew since then. But the fermentation takes are probably never going to be in it. But
that's not really so relevant. The only thing that is relevant is they boil it in a pot. Because what's in the barrel, what's that, you're only talking about the fluids that are going to be absorbed in the wall, and that's going to be sunny. So that's kosh. How does that work? Ein Ben Yomer is something which is only kosh. How does that work?
No, so it wouldn't make it out there. If what was in the pot walls was trafe, if it was in the barrel walls was trafe, it wouldn't make it out there. So if that was trafe, it would make the next thing out there. So then if it was trafe and sitting there for 24 hours, obviously that would make it out there.
Right, so that's what we're talking
about. But something that became kosher that just sat there for 24 hours would not.
After you're assuming the oyster stout sat there for a few weeks.
Within 24 hours, you put it in
kosher. Kosher beer. So that wouldn't translate.
Because by the time kosher happens, it's already been 24 hours.
Aha, I hear that.
But unless it came in hot or something like
right.
that.
Right, so again, you don't know, because if you're doing a gall within 24 hours, then it stays austere. So right. You never, it's basically a cycle that you're never really getting out of. It's true, you're right about the fermentation things. I'm sorry. So, another, there's a couple.
They have like a closed for Thanksgiving or something like that.
These things are.
They don't close. I was.
They never close for.
Time is money.
Time is money. Exactly. They don't close. I'm saying, and they're pink. Right. So, again, like I'm saying, hot. Might not be, the cold might not be problematic, although. But they don't close. They're brewing basically every single day. A lot of them are in it for their lives. They're putting their whole life investment into this, and it's such a, like we said, it's such a competitive industry that, which is what Rabbi Nias from the CRC claims, the reason that they're doing all these funky beers is to be individual, to be different, because in such a competitive industry, that's what they're trying to do. Focus on us, because we're doing something different, which is really the point of every single brewery. Some of them focus on different things. But why would they brew oyster sats? And it happens to be that these days it's pretty popular, so it's not something to be, at this point, it's not something to be different anymore. A lot of the big brewers stay away from it because they want to stay vegetarian. Well, not just with kosher, there's a lot of like vegetarians in America, and they also don't like that type of thing. I just realized I totally, talking about vegetarian, I totally missed the filtering the beer. So they use, not anymore, really, but they have been used in the past. Something which is like either isinglass or isinglass, which is the swim bladder of the sturgeon, which is a not kosher fish, and it's a filtering agent. They put it into the beer and it stays there, and that clears the beer. So, and the pisvei tshuva in tzavi tes sifkat and dalad, which is our siman in second seder, he brings down the Nevi Yehuda who's mopped it for different reasons. Again, I didn't go through the Nevi Yehuda myself, and I don't know all the reasons. However, that wouldn't be problematic. So Nevi Yehuda's mopped it. Again, nowadays, they're not usually filtering based on the fact that there are so many vegetarians in the world and they want their beer to be vegetarian, they're not using animal products to filter the beer. There's just something that, so we, was brought up that if the next...
It makes them not vegetarian?
Yeah. They're very vegetarian, more mafia than kosher. We don't want the vegans. You know, they don't want to have any contact with animals. Nothing to do with the flavors. It's more about animal rights. We don't want fish to be used in our products. So it was brought out that the child of Levi is that the reason why you can never have a kosher run of beer is because of Hanan. I don't think it's halacha ma'isa, but when we're learning the Eges Moshe in their day of days, Simon Mimalev, it talks about margarine, the second run margarine. The first run is not used for kashrus. Again, a lot of different circumstances there, from the Yom Yom, different things. But he says, most Rishayim, any liquid can be used for Hagalah. So I don't think you use halacha ma'isa, just something interesting that we learned, that it could be that to consider that a second batch of beer, if it's not becoming Hanan, again, then maybe it could be used for Hagalah because it's hot and it's any liquid, and that is, according to Mr. Shem, good enough. So I hope I touched upon as much as I could. So as we're winding down, the maskana, does beer need a hechsher, and what is the din of microbreweries? So the CRC and the Star K, both of them are very, on their websites, they have lists. They're the ones that are the go-getters, I guess, in the kashrus industry today regarding beer, kashrus and beer. And they hold, both of them, that if it's a national or international brewery on a large scale, such as Budweiser, Heineken, Corona, Coors and Miller also, but they happen to have a hechsher of the OU, so that it doesn't really... All these breweries, Stella Artois, however you pronounce that, or
Artois.
All right, all these beers, it doesn't make a difference if they're made in America or they're made out of America. If they're not flavored, then it's not problematic. Because if they do use flavorings on other runs, it's a very small amount. They're not brewing non-kosher beers. Happens to be Budweiser does make a non-kosher beer, but the CRC looked into them and decided that they're okay. They don't actually give hashgacha on the beer, but Budweiser makes a beer with clam chowder. It's called Chelada. And I'm not getting into that. The CRC has an article on their website if you're interested, and they say that it's okay. Again, maybe it's because of the largeness of NS.
Beer is okay?
Not the beer. Budweiser in general. Yes, because Budweiser brews millions of barrels of beer, as opposed to the biggest microbrewery, Sam Adams, makes like 6 million a year, if about 4 million. And Budweiser is brewing like 40 million, maybe more. So that's the reason. Again, so national and international day companies not flavored it's in the beer industry, it's known as macro brewing as opposed to the micro. So all the macro breweries that aren't flavored, it's totally fine. The okay happens to hold that macro breweries do need a half sugar, but the CRC and the SRK say they do not. So just as an aside. So microbreweries is where it gets interesting. So microbreweries, one of the things about microbreweries is there's a few things that can be problematic besides what we need to be discussed. One of them is that a lot of breweries, they don't have enough size. If you ask me about capacity, a lot of them are brewing at capacity and therefore they can't afford to make a new brewery or in the process of making a new brewery. So what they do is they call it contract brewing. There are breweries that besides for brewing their own beer, they brew other breweries' beer. And I don't know how public that knowledge is of which beers they're brewing, which breweries. So there are certain breweries that are known to contract brew. And if that's the case, then all beers from that brewery should not be recommended, because even if they themselves are not brewing any culture-sensitive ingredient beers.
Which beers are macro and which beers are macro?
So macro is Budweiser, Coors, Miller, Heineken, Artois, Corona. Blue Moon is brewed by Coors, so it's also considered macro in the beer industry. However, Blue Moon has OU on it, so it's not a problem. I mean, all Blue Moons are flavored. I think every single one is flavored, so technically it wouldn't be an option. But the Blue Moon has OU on it, so it's totally acceptable.
Sam Adams is micro?
So Sam Adams is, in the beer industry, it is considered micro. I haven't thought of a list over here, it's not current, but Sam Adams, all the beers are under the Hashkafa of the Star Kit. I one time saw an interesting article how they got that, because they wanted to be sold in Israel. And in order to be sold in Israel, there has to be Hashkafa on it or something. So that's how the Sam Adams hooked up with the Star Kit. So the contract brewing is one thing is one problem with microbreweries. Another problem with microbreweries, and Nias from the CRC holds very strongly about this problem, is that even if they're not selling and marketing an oyster stout or beer brewed with pig and as such, very possibly they're experimenting. So I haven't said I've done I'm not arguing on them in Allah or Maisa, but I have done a bit of research, and it seems almost every single brewery, microbrewery, they have a separate run where they're doing their experimental batches. Smaller, they're not doing however small a brewery is, they usually have an even smaller batch where they do their experimental batches. So even though that's how we hold Allah HaMaisa,
they don't use the regular kalim. They're
not using the regular kalim. Another thing is almost every single brewery also has a lab. So they're doing a lot of like Ragatlib said, all your kushy food that you eat now it starts in a lab. The same with beer. Almost all beer, all breweries have a lab, they have quality control. And chances are, if the brewery does not brew any trace ingredients and it's possible to be found out, then l'chayra, it should be mutter. Again, the CRC doesn't really hold that. They do have a list of big breweries that are still within the craft realm, but they're distributed on a very large national scale, and therefore, on their website, they do have a bunch of breweries that they will tell you that any other non-flavored beers are recommended, even though there's no actual hashgacha on the breweries. Again, not all for myself, I do feel that this problem of experiment is not a problem. Another thing is that breweries can be contacted and with email, and they will answer. I bought a beer and I didn't realize that it was flavored. So I emailed the brewery. I have an allergy sensitive. I'm allergy sensitive. You know, was it having to be vanilla? Do they use real vanilla or vanilla extract? And from the way I worded the question, I'm not sure how, he understood it to me that I would rather vanilla extract, which is not the case. And he said, we're very sorry, but we don't use any extract. We use 100% whole vanilla beans. So again, I wouldn't buy that l'chatchila, but the other, once I bought it, Maseach Vituma Lufida Brewery, it's used real vanilla beans, which I don't think, unless someone told me, would be a problem with kosher. So the breweries, again, can be contacted with the flavors beer bowl. Maskana, microbreweries, if they're produced on a large scale for sure, and even the ones that aren't produced on such a large scale, again, now through the CRC, if there's no beers brewed with kosher sensitive ingredients, then they're not flavored beers. Bechera should be mutter. Any questions?
Sure. So Bud Light is good?
Bud Light Lime is not recommended according to CRC and StarK, because that's made with flavorings and chance, so they're not using limes, and they're putting in some sort of extract. And once there's extract, it could be made with anything. So,
are winter beers considered flavored, or seasonal beers?
So,
all the San Andreas flavors that Oktoberfest
is made. So, Oktoberfest is not a flavored beer. It's a seasonal beer. It's not a flavored beer. Oktoberfest wouldn't need a hefter. It does have a hefter on it. The winter beers, a lot of them have spices and seeds. Sam Adams said a winter lager, there's a star K in it, it's 100% fine. I think one of the breweries that they have over here is Inker Brewery, and they make a winter beer, and it doesn't show up on the recommended list because there's spices in it. So, again, you'd have to know.
Is the only one micro or macro?
It's in between.
Like Sam Adams type?
It's like Sam Adams.
They don't. Not sure?
Yingling, it's a large brewery on a national scale, and they don't brew any culture sensitive ingredients. Probably not.
They don't make like flavors.
They make. They do make other beers, but they're not brewing with culture sensitive ingredients.
Why is the example of Tituma? Every company wants to be natural, so they always probably do the natural even more than that.
Because the way he,
even though you made it naturally, you don't want natural, but he's saying it isn't.
No, but he could sue their pants off now that they sent him an email.
Yeah, once.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, once. That's your personal.
You guys, why do you sue?
They wouldn't go on record live.
He had allergies to the ill extract.
The allergy is the same for
the CRC has a policy when if a brewery or a company says something in America, there's a mirsis that they're not going to be lying. So Rabbi Gottlieb one time discussed the email thing. He says if Rabbi so-and-so at suchandsuchashkacha@gmail.com sends an allergy sensitive question to a company, Rabbi Gottlieb said it could be it's not called Masiach Vitume because his email is Rabbi so-and-so. My email is not, so I'm not a shkacha. So.
You're a lover, right?
No. It's not. So you want to know if you want, I wouldn't recommend buying flavored beer and then doing this. Most beers do say on a flavored beer. Flavored stout, let's say. Or flavored IPA. There are many flavored IPAs out there now. Most breweries do write on the front flavored, and then you'll know it's flavored and you'll stay away from that. This beer didn't say anything flavored any on the side, in small print that it say about flavors, and that's how I missed it when I was in the store.
Every micro brewery, like, unless you know uniforms or anything, don't know these kosher ingredients, we don't really get in our place.
So, legally, if a beer is contract, and they can't be called a brewing company. I know there's a brewery out there, it's called Hebrew Beer. The official name is Schmaltz Brewing. It's a non-from Jew. He has some Yiddish kind of name, but he's also a very trusted person. And his beer is brewed under the Ashkacha of the KSA, and his beers are almost all kosher, not 100%. You have to look for the label. But he wrote a book, and he used to do contract brewing. And he was not allowed to be called Schmaltz Brewing Company because he didn't brew. Schmaltz Beer Company. Now that he has his own brewery, he's allowed to be called Schmaltz Brewing Company. So it's something that can be found. And there's another, there are breweries out there, there are famous breweries that contract brew, and it says brewed in such and such a brewery. The reason, it's not hard to know if that beer is contract brewed. It's usually easy, very easy to find out. The problem with beers that are brewed in their own company that do contract brew, happens to be, talking about Hebrew beer, they contract brew for other breweries. They have Ashkacha, so their beer, the ones that have Ashkacha are fine, you're allowed to drink them. But it's a very normal, accepted thing. Brooklyn Brewery, for example, a lot of their beers are brewed in Utica, New York, upstate New York. And those beers, all of them have Ashkacha on them. So all those beers, even if they're flavored, are kosher. And they're contract brewed by a company called FX Matt, which also brews a kosher beer called Saranac. But the Brooklyn Brewery beer is made in Brooklyn, New York. So they're not kosher, and they brew with oysters and kosher sensitive ingredients. So that's why Brooklyn is like something that, if you know, unless you know for a fact it's kosher, you shouldn't drink it.
Are there any major companies that do this kind of?
So like I just said, Brooklyn. I mean,
it's our core as well, like in the macro.
They do. It's not on a wide scale, but it has been done.
So that big of a, so if you have a Coors, you know that it's made by
Coors. Coors has an OU. So any beer has Hashkafa. Budweiser doesn't contract, but Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch InBev, which they own like one third of the beers in the world. They just bought out Miller. Basically, almost any beer you drink in the world is owned by Budweiser. It's the biggest company in the world. So they're not contract brewing, but in general, if it's contract brewed, don't know if it's legally, but most probably will say on the label brewed at such and such a facility. And then, again, if it's contract, you should avoid it, but it's something that can be found out. The problem is that you know that, like, there's a brewery in Connecticut. It's called Two Roads Brewery. I was going through Connecticut on vacation this summer, and I contacted somebody. I wanted to stop there for a tour, and he said you should avoid their beers because they contract for other companies. Even if you look at their beer list, and all their beers are fine, but the fact that they contract, we don't know who they're contracting for and which beers those contract those small other breweries are brewing.
Are we going to have beer tasting now?
That was awesome.